Before we get started on the Bengals Beat podcast, I wanted to let you know that we are now brought to you by 50 West Brewery. They have award-winning beers coupled with a bike shop, canoe and kayak library, volleyball leagues, running groups, and a killer food menu. At 50 West, they pride themselves on adding value to people's lives through beer. Is there a better way to add value to people's lives than through beer? Whether you're looking to take a float down the river and end with a beer or throw back a couple and play some volleyball, 50 West is unlike any other brewery you've ever seen. Check out their website at 50westbrew.com. That's F-I-F-T-Y, westbrew.com for more information. 50 West, where every beer's a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewery. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals Beat writers, Jim Osarski and Paul Weiner Jr. invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out insider news, listen in on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. You can subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, or your preferred podcast platform. Of course, you can always listen in the podcast section of our Cincinnati.com Bengals app. Let's go. All right, welcome into the BBP2. This is the Deuce Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewing Company. Paul Daner Jr. and Jim Ozarski, your Bengals Beat writer for Cincinnati.com. With the Cincinnati Inquirer. Jim, happy Thursday to you.
Yeah.
It's been a long week already.
Yeah, there's a game.
There's a game. There's something besides the trade deadline debacle that has dominated around here. It's funny, on the first BBP, which we record on Mondays, we talked a little bit about trades and why they would or would not make them.
Right.
And we didn't really talk about McCarron.
No.
Because that had sort of just been off the radar a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it's always out there. But I think the thought continued to be that no one was going to ever give the Bengals what they were asking for, and they were kind of cruising along. Even, you know, we'll get into this. We got a lot to get into. We're gonna really dive into this McCarron situation because nobody was more on top of it than you were. Thankfully, I was Tuesdays are my dad day, and you're on it and hanging around for piecing through news.
Yeah.
And that happened. I was like, what is going on? and then by the time midnight came, you've got everybody across the league spilling the details on what happened. Yeah. I want to personally, on the record, on the deuce, commend you for an incredible bit of reporting to have all of that information by the time people woke up on Wednesday morning. Very well done.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It was crazy because, you know, we weren't wrong in that we said the Bengals won't make any trades because they didn't.
They technically didn't.
I think the idea of moving current players for prospects, I don't even think they were ready to do that. The Browns made them ready. The Browns convinced them that this was a real thing. Unlike the pre-draft stuff and whatever, you know, which makes the end result of this all the more fascinating and likely frustrating upstairs at Paul Brown, because the Bengals didn't want to do this. They didn't even want to have this conversation.
No.
And then let alone have to deal with a fallout of the team that initiated it screwing it up.
Right. And then trying to basically blame
the Bengals. Right. Yeah. It was just, you know, it was just a wild series of events. I'm sure people know by now. Bengals agreed to terms for a second and third round draft pick next year. Did not agree to terms initially. Brown said no.
Yes.
Right before the deadline, the Browns call back, say yes. And then it was a mad scramble and, you know, whatever happens with, like, missed emails and the ether and whatever. But basically, a deal was agreed upon. Bengals got it in. Browns didn't.
The Browns didn't. Here's the weird thing. In the, you know, everybody you talk to and that we talked to and that spoke on or off the record, nationally, locally, Marvin, also, there's really one bottom line to this. If there was ever confusion or worry on the Browns' part, all they had to do was make any contact with the league.
Right. Any.
Call somebody. Send an email. anything to say, hey, we agreed to a deal. We're not sure what's going on with paperwork here.
Right.
But we're doing McCarron for a one.
We don't know what we're doing at NFL.
At NFL.
At commish.
Yeah. At Raj. Yeah, someone hit up Raj's beeper. You know what I mean?
Right.
But all you make any contact with the league, if you're concerned that it's something's not happening, we haven't heard back, what's going on?
Right.
Let the league know in some way, shape, or form that you are trying to do this. And then maybe your appeal to the league has any shot.
Right.
But it doesn't. And that's what, to me, there's the conspiracy theory out there with this. And I don't personally think it's a conspiracy when you look at you really look at the background of all of this.
Yeah.
You have a team philosophy happening in Cleveland that is Sashi Brown and management all are totally cool with tanking.
Yeah.
They want picks. They want to stink for 2 years and suddenly be good. Get their quarterback, have all these picks, and then go on a run with this big young team of all young stud picks, right? That's what they want. This would jeopardize that because, A, they would lose two important picks for next year, and, B, McCarron would be brought in to try to win them some games this year. He's a free agent.
Right.
He would be brought in to try to win some games this year. And Hugh, his point of view has always been, we need to teach these guys how to win, and we need to go win if we're ever going to build anything around here.
Right.
Guys need to know how to go win in this league to build some momentum, anything.
Look at the struggles this team is having.
Right.
You got a bunch of dudes in here who won 60 games.
But there's 15 that have never really won a lot, and they're having to learn.
Right.
Much less a whole team of guys that don't know how to win. Because I don't care. Right. Even Joe Thomas doesn't know how to win because he's been on only bad teams, so to speak. You know what I mean? But so you have these two conflicting sides, and you can just see where the owner and Hugh would be like, you're right, we need to try to win. Make the McCarron deal. And the GM saying, I'm going to sabotage this.
Yeah,
I can't let this happen. And so this whole fiasco with paperwork, there's no way a bunch of lawyers don't know how to do some paperwork correctly.
Right.
In fact, they know how to do it so well, they knew how to properly screw it up and come across looking like they tried. Call it a conspiracy theory. You talk to enough people, it seems very realistic.
Yeah, it's funny, Paul, because all I heard was from everyone involved, well, we know how to make trades.
Yes.
How many trades have we made? We've made a lot of trades. And I really can't dispute that on either end. You know what I mean? But the people I know are the ones in this building. And then, pretty much everyone in the league has come out and, said the Bengals were the ones that did it right. Yeah, it's fascinating. We wrote about this way back in February about how these things happen.
How do these things happen?
And it's usually, if you're going to get a haul, it's out of desperation. And I think that's what happened. I think Hugh lost his mind with Jimmy Garoppolo being moved for just the two. It might be a high two. It could be the 49ers own pick at 33 or 34. But when you got 12 and you got two others in the second round, I could see that being a point of contention for the coaching staff or even ownership. Because how are you going to work in 12 new guys on a team after you just had 13?
Yeah.
And however many free agents. So that's my sense, Paul, was that it was a desperate part of an organization.
Yes.
And another part that wanted to kind of step on the throat of that. We'll never know. We probably will at some point because everyone loves to seem to talk up there.
They do.
So,
and guess when they're really going to talk? When somebody gets asked.
Fired, right.
Because that's happening.
Yeah, because then it's CYA time by whoever.
Yeah.
Because this makes everyone look bad there. Coaches, owner, front office.
As if they couldn't.
Couldn't look worse.
A great tweet. It can always get worse. I mean, people up there are just, and you dipped into the walkthrough on Thursday into just the comedy. Brown's Twitter is a whole different, a different ocean than the pools that we deal with. The level of, the way they've just embraced the humor of the Browns. You have to.
You do.
You have to. It's just, it's fairly unbelievable that this, and the Bengals are just sitting here saying, the Bengals didn't do anything but sit the whole time and say, this is our price.
Right.
if you would like to meet it, give us a call.
Yeah.
And they did. And the Bengals turned it in.
It's unbelievable. So the guy caught in the middle of all this met with us you know, on Wednesday, and it was funny because Andy Dalton dragged him into the press conference room, which I didn't know at the time. I think I was the only one in here for.
to actually talk to Andy.
And he was like, hey, who do you want? Who do you want? You know, with AJ in here, and because they knew, you know, and they tried to have some fun. But you could definitely tell, I think, it was an emotional toll for AJ.
Yeah, yeah. So here's AJ McCarron meeting with a massive throng of media awaiting him on a portion of it. It actually went for a very long time, so I don't want to waste all your day on it. But here's a portion of McCarron.
What was yesterday like for you? What was that whirlwind of emotions like?
It's hard to answer it truthfully. Because you're sitting there with family getting ready for Halloween and dressing little man up, and then you get a call that says you're going somewhere, and then you start trying to figure out, you know, what's happening really, and then you're not. So.
So you were told you were going to the Browns.
My agent thought, you know, it was a done deal, and all I know is what I was told, and paperwork got turned in a little too late, and that's why I didn't go down.
Yesterday morning, did you think there was any chance in the world that you were going to be traded?
No. I came in here, worked out, watched film, did my usual Tuesday deal, and then went home and was getting ready for Halloween and figuring out how much candy we had, if we were going to have any people. I think that's what I'm more upset about. We got all that candy and nobody showed up to the house. So,
kind of like the trade.
I guess.
What time did you find out it didn't go down?
I guess when everybody else found out on Twitter.
Oh, you didn't? Nobody came to say
that. Mm-hmm. I mean, my agent said they were writing a appeal for the thing on the trade that it should be passed, and I got a call later on after that said it didn't. It got rejected. So,
what kind of conversations have you had with Marvin, front office, etc. since?
None. I mean, you know, talked to Marvin for a little bit yesterday.
It was fake news.
And just you know, he told me he was still glad to have me here, and but you know, I today I'm gonna thank Mr. Brown personally, just because I admire that, you know, he was just gonna give me the opportunity to go start and play somewhere, and I really appreciate that of him. You know, he's been an unbelievable owner for my experience here, so. I really appreciated that.
Did you have an immediate reaction when you were first told that you were supposedly traded?
I mean, excited. I'm a big competitor, and you want to play and you want your opportunity, but that's about it, really.
How long did you think you were a Cleveland Brown?
I mean, I don't know if I ever really thought it, really. I mean, I've learned through this whirlwind of a year, you know, you can't really expect anything until it actually happens. So I just waited till I actually found out and then reacted really after that. So
what about the possibility of reuniting with Hugh Jackson? How exciting would that have been?
Yeah, it would have been really exciting, but you know, it didn't happen. So I'm blessed to be either way. I mean, either situation. I'm living out my dream playing in the NFL, and I have a beautiful family. Everybody's healthy, so you know, it would have been awesome. But at the same time, I'm focused on my job here now and being, you know, the best backup, the best scout team guy. I mean, whatever I need to be. For us to, you know, to help win, during the week to hopefully so it correlates on the weekend. But I'm just blessed, and you know, there's no hard feelings either way. It's just a good time to be living right now, I guess.
Does it make it hard to focus even in the short term?
No. I think the biggest thing it does, been through a lot of mind games, so I think it makes you mentally tougher, stronger, lets you see all the crazy sides of this business in a short amount of time. Just in my year alone, I've experienced a lot that guys that have been in the league 10 years hasn't experienced. So just by hearing your name, then you are, you might be. So, but like I said, I'm blessed to be in my situation, and I'm just enjoying every minute of it. So.
So that sort of wraps up that mess. Yeah. I don't really know what else you can even say about it. Marvin Lewis sort of said afterwards, "I've never seen anything like it."
Yeah.
No, I've not. The bottom line is it's just not that hard to do.
Yeah, basically, this is how bad it was. Marvin didn't backhand you. He backhanded the Browns.
Yeah.
It's a bad day for them.
You know what I do want to address real quick is this headline, because this always is what happens. A national headline comes out of a quote of Marvin saying that he was relieved that the trade didn't happen.
Yeah.
And it became a thing, like people were ripping on Marvin for this. And there's plenty of reasons to rip on Marvin. Let's try to stick to the ones that are more legitimate. He went on a whole thing about how he obviously the big picture wanted the trade to happen. They would not have agreed to do it anyway. He's saying he's relieved for the current team because that would be something he would have to deal with, is all of a sudden they don't have A.J. McCarron as the backup.
Yeah.
They're bringing Jeff Driskel off the PS, and there's value put on McCarron. There's a reason why a 2 and a 3 was the price.
Yeah, and this is actually a good transition into this weekend's game, Paul, because think about it. If we're sitting here on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Jeff Driskel hasn't practiced. Jeff Driskel hasn't done anything since he broke his fingers in Indy.
Mm-hmm.
He's been rehabbing, and the splint's off, and maybe he's been throwing, but he can't practice?
No.
That's the rule of IR.
Yep.
He's out there running around with Mason Schreck and the specialists kicking balls over there. So that really would have put your team in a weird spot going into Jacksonville when you know Andy is going to get hit a lot.
Yeah.
And he's already been slow getting up the last few weeks.
I mean, look, he's been on the injury report. He's taken hits every single week. It's only going to get worse with these guys in Denver right around the corner as well. I mean, he's going to take more hits. The odds of needing A.J. McCarron at some point this season they're not as long as they typically are.
Right.
And so to have that to go to is a luxury. And otherwise, can Jeff Driskel come in here and win games for this team? I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
And A.J. McCarron certainly can. He has when they've needed him to. And that's important. And Marvin values that. And that was his point in saying he's relieved, because for his current situation that's in front of him this week and for the rest of this year, his situation is much easier when he knows he has A.J. McCarron there in case something happens to Andy Dalton.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you're right. That was a little – I thought that was strange.
Like I felt like people were trying to paint him as saying he was relieved, like he disagreed with the fact they were even doing it. It was – that was what the headlines were made out to be. So don't believe the headlines necessarily. I mean, yes, the word relieved was used, but it was in the fact that for this year, life is easier with McCarron here than without him, which is obvious.
Right.
But in the long run, obviously, a 2 and a 3. I mean, think about this. What the Bengals would have had if this goes through. And I know Bengals fans are like, oh, no, this is what it's like being a Browns fan.
This is the part that sucks.
This is the part that sucks when you deal with the Browns. Is they would have had 6 picks in the first 3 rounds and 9 in the first 5 next year. And take that thought and look at the returns they got off of having a lot of extra picks last year. And this would be a better haul.
Yes.
As far as value picks going into it than they had last year.
Right.
Because they are going to get a 3 and a 5 for Zeitler and Whitworth. And if you, you know, when you look at what it looks like from the over the cap guys are great at that. Nick Corte does a fantastic job. He's their comp pick specialist, which is just amazing that that's a thing. I love it. And, they are even saying that the Bengals will probably have another 7, maybe 2 sevens, depending on how it falls out, from Marcus Hunt even.
Go figure.
Even Carlos Dansby, possibly, depending on how things fall. But the bottom line, they'd have an extra pick late. So you're talking about, I mean, you're talking about 12 picks, 9 in the first 5 rounds, 6 in the first 3. If you look at the early returns they've gotten off of this draft and the 16 draft, with between William Jackson and a lot of guys in that draft, that's what the core of a team that makes long half-decade runs is made of.
It's like the 11 and 12. It would kind of make up for 13, 14, and 15, kind of whiffing on a lot of spots.
Right, absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, 6 in the first 3 rounds, you're looking at 4 starters you got, you know, and maybe 2 role players. Because that's just, you have to, the math of it.
Hitting 50%.
Yeah.
And they hit better. We ripped on them for rightfully for those 3 drafts in a row that they've missed, but the quantity of it makes it, that's the whole point of getting extra picks.
This is gonna make Bengals fans so sad. I mean, I guess anything, I guess we've got January to March. I don't think this team will go to the
Super Bowl. Mock drafts yet.
So
no mock drafts
yet. March, to maybe see if the Bengals can recoup, you know, a second pick again, but it doesn't, it just, I think this is why they took the shot. This is why Mike agreed to it, because it probably wasn't going to get any better.
No, it wasn't going to get better. It wasn't going to get better than this. This was what they
wanted. This was
the
desperate move, because now cooler heads will prevail upstate in January. It might be different heads, because the old heads are rolling somewhere.
Yeah. The only thing left on McCarron will be to find out what happens with his arbiter's case, whether he ends up an RFA or unrestricted. If he's an RFA, the Bengals have to decide what they want their tender to be. They can put a 1, a 2, or the round you were drafted, which was, in his case, a 5th. So that means if a team signed him to a contract and the Bengals didn't match, they would be compensated that.
Right.
So I would say a 2 is probably... And maybe teams will not be willing to give them a 2. I don't know. We'll see how that plays out.
Wait, can I just throw a little salt in the wound?
Go ahead.
Carson Wentz, NFC Offensive Player of the Month. Deshaun Watson, AFC Offensive Player of the Month.
Oh, God.
Botch trade. All in
the
span of 36 hours.
The only thing
that
this guarantees when you look at Deshaun Watson and Carson Wentz is that AJ McCarron is probably going to be a star.
Yeah.
Because only players that the Browns miss turn into star quarterbacks. That's pretty much it. The ones that they actually get all fall apart and are on a swan somewhere in Las Vegas. Right? So just know that. It's probably, as Doc wrote, the best thing that ever happened to AJ McCarron. I think by the end of the day, he'll be pretty happy about it. All right. Let's move forward to this Jacksonville game. You know, look, I'm nervous for Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
I'm a little nervous for the man's health.
Yeah, it's legit.
I mean, the way the Jags get after the quarterback and cover.
Yeah.
That's the element that people don't talk enough about. You know, Doug Marrone, we had him on a conference call this week, and he said, it's our sacks of the 33, which they're on pace to break the NFL record.
Yeah.
The NFL record, 72 by the 84 Bears. They're on pace for 75, the Jags are. He said they're about half coverage sacks, half the line.
Yeah.
Because they can cover Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah.
These dudes, A.J. Bouye, these guys can absolutely cover, and it forces you to hold the ball longer if you don't have guys that can win one-on-one. Oh, have we talked about that before here?
Yeah.
How the Bengals don't, except for 18? So you have to be nervous for Andy Dalton this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, twice. They ended Tom Savage's career in week 1. That's why we're talking about Deshaun Watson at all in Houston. You know, they have 3 losses. But so they've one loss. This is, if you go by that sort of old Brett Saberhagen San Francisco Giant theory, this is the week they lose. They won 2 weeks ago by a week. But defense number 1 in scoring, number 6 overall, number 1 against the pass, dead last against the run.
Dead last against the run.
Which, that's not really anything.
Which
the
is
Bengals
great if that's something
of.
You can do.
Yeah. Bengals can't take advantage of that.
Can't
the
do
thing
it.
That might surprise people, number 12 offense in the league, which isn't world-beating, but when your defense is that good, that's top half, especially with a jaggy quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And a top seven scoring offense, I want to say. Now, I'm sure there's some defensive touchdowns in there. I mean, just like the Bengals have had.
Yeah, a bunch.
But, you know, it still counts as points. So, running game, Leonard Fournette. I mean, the Bengals really liked him. That would have been a decision to make at nine if he somehow slipped, and he's kind of living up to it.
Yeah, he's had some long runs. The Bengals have not given up a run longer than 20 yards or longer this whole year. And Leonard Fournette has three of them, two of them for touchdowns, a 90, a 75, they got a 30.
Which I didn't think, I mean, we knew his, like, combine speed and the whole thing with, like, getting fat on water and then losing, skinny on water and whatever, but it's legit.
He's 6 foot 228. He's built like a house, and he runs really fast. The there's one run we were watching it yesterday, and I was trying to show you, like, the amazing element of him is how he takes people by surprise. It was the run against the Rams, and he breaks open into the second level, and he's one on one with a safety who's basically. To even say he has the angle is not fair. He's standing in front of the guy with about 15 yards. And Fournette just kind of sprints a little bit to the right, and the safety had no clue that kind of speed was coming his way, and he doesn't even get near him.
Right.
And Fournette just runs off in front of the 75-yard touchdown. Teams are taken aback by him, and they're taken aback by this Jacksonville pass rush. You combine those two, and you have what's turned into the formula to the Jags' success. They have hammered teams early.
Yes.
69-6 in their four wins.
Yeah.
Halftime score.
Yeah, wow.
69-6. It is, I believe, they've scored four. It's been 30-14 the opposite way in their three losses at halftime.
Yeah.
When teams don't, because this is maybe one of the best teams in NFL history to play from ahead.
Yeah.
Because they've got Fournette, they've got a running game, and they've got this pass rush.
Right.
They're made to play from ahead. And when they get ahead, it spirals for the other team in a hurry. So you cannot fall behind. And the fact that they've taken some team by surprise with their pass rush and with Leonard Fournette has been why they've had these blowouts.
Yeah.
You know, you have all of these blowouts that all their wins are by 21 points or more. They beat the living hell out of Baltimore in London. They made Ben Roethlisberger throw five picks and thinking he was washed up and his career was over. I mean, to me, that's that. There's a couple. Obviously, I'm worried for Andy Dalton's health. Obviously, you know, the run defense is important. The Bengals cannot fall behind early. They have to stay around. They have to keep it close. When you do that, Jacksonville's very beatable. Bortles will start throwing it to you, just like he has the last 2 years.
Yeah.
He'll get real jaggy.
Yeah, you know.
Sorry, that was a long. That went way longer.
honestly, Paul, that's why I think you know the Bengals don't get this one. You know, 2 weeks ago, I was on this version of our podcast and planted the flag, as I said, with the Steelers defense or the Bengals defense, and they you know let someone else capture it and run away with it, and it's been gone. It's gone. So while it will get to maybe why I think they could win, but I don't. I think it'll be 23-10, largely for every reason you just laid out. I think it's a terrible matchup in so many ways. And in the one area the Bengals could maybe take advantage of, they can't run the ball on their own.
No.
When they've tried to with 30-plus carries or 25-plus carries, they can't do it. When they try to with gadget plays and whatever, you can't do that consistently. So I just think it's I don't know.
You have to beat this team. You have to be able to run the ball.
Yeah,
and you have to be able to do it effectively. And if you can't do it against the Colts at home, you can't do it anywhere. And they haven't done it anywhere all year.
Yeah.
So you know it puts them in a spot where they're going to have to throw. They're going to find themselves in too many third and longs, and it's Jacksonville.
Yep.
That's the problem. That's why it's a bad matchup. I'm with you. I have 20-14. You know, I think special teams and defense will do some things for them. But I don't think it'll be enough. I think they're going to be put in too many spots where everything we just mentioned. Let's move to Optimistic Bobby, who has his optimistic takes of the week and is going to be back talking to us about jagginess. So here's 50 West Brewing Company owner Bobby Slattery, a.k.a. Optimistic Bobby, a.k.a. Twitter man of the people, over 500, dealing with fame.
All right, it is time for everybody's favorite segment. It is time for Optimistic Takes with our guy, 50 West owner Bobby Slattery. Optimistic Bobby, what's going on?
Hoo day. Does that sound confident?
Nice, nice, solid, confident hoo day. Not breaking the speakers, but happy.
No. Just you know what? A win is a win. The best teams out there always find a way to win, and I feel like that was the case on Sunday. So I want to sound confident. I don't want to sound cocky. I don't want to sound ahead of myself. I want to just say, hey, I'm proud we walked away with a win, and let's get ready for Jacksonville.
If there was anybody that I knew would not walk out of that stadium feeling down about the general way the team played, it'd be you. You would be focusing on it's hard to win in this league, right? That's the most important
Absolutely.
Thing.
Yeah. A win is a win. You know, that's the best teams can figure out ways to win ugly, and I think that the Bengals showed that on Sunday, so I'm very happy about it.
You got to win when you don't
are you
play
ready
well.
For,
I'm with you. So
are you ready for my takes?
Yeah, I'm ready for some optimistic takes. So what's your optimistic takes this week?
Okay, well, I want to talk about the trade that didn't happen. We got to talk about this briefly.
Okay.
First off, I'm not going to be optimistic about it. I think I am happy that AJ's still on the team, but I do feel like the Browns won the trade by not making the trade.
You're right. They didn't even know how to screw it up correctly.
They couldn't screw it up correctly, and I have three. There's three things that I have three theories for what happened.
Okay.
So, option one, the first theory is that Hugh knows he's headed back to Cincy and he's doing the Carson Palmer deal all over again. So,
okay.
He's loading up the team, getting them ready.
Yeah.
Theory two is that things are actually worse in Cleveland than everyone thinks that they are. And the third piece of this has to do with the Browns' new sabermetrics. And I think that whoever their special sabermetrics people were potentially out of town. And Hugh did not have access to a calculator and was trying to do the math long division. And he missed the 4 o'clock cutoff. And that's why they get it in late.
Math is hard. Math on scratch paper is hard. It takes time. You got to carry the one. You know what I mean? Like, it's not just that easy to figure it out. I agree that you got to do it correctly. You got to make sure it's right before you send it in. Math is hard.
This isn't baseball. Football guys, we're football guys. They're not mathematicians yet. Now, 15, 20 years from now, they'll probably have it in some sort of – the calculator probably is carried with everybody. But right now, the coaches aren't carrying calculators, and that's what happens when you get into the safer metric stuff is you got to make sure you got the calculator there to get the trade done in time. So
maybe he had a calculator, but it was one of the scientific calculators, and he got stuck in scientific
Yes.
That's the worst.
Yes, didn't know how to use it.
Couldn't
find the function button.
No.
Totally.
No one under the age of 30 knows what we're talking about.
No, they're totally lost.
so
like, why wouldn't you just use your phone?
Right. Just ask Siri, right?
Yeah, ask Siri, exactly.
So all right. Those are your optimistic takes. Are there any more optimistic takes, or was that?
Yeah,
was
one other one. I mean, can we talk about like this whole Will Jackson thing? I mean, it's really been the highlight of my year. I was a Will Jackson guy coming in. I got nervous earlier in the year when he kind of did that boneheaded thing. What was it? He couldn't get off the field. And I was like, oh, God, I've got behind this guy, and now he's looking like an idiot. But, I mean, he's the real deal. It's awesome.
He is. It's hard to disagree with you on that. I think he's maybe the most encouraging of everything that's been encouraging this season. I think he's probably – him and Carl Lawson are 1-1A.
It's great. It's so great. My son's 5 years old. I had to teach him about Vontaze Perfect this weekend. It's like the highlight of his life. He's just like, he just envisions him as this like really bad guy who just kills people left and right. And as a 5 year old, it was great. He's always been like an Andy Dalton, AJ Green guy. But now it's like that there's this sinister player on the Bengals that the rest of the NFL is like totally against. Anyways, it's awesome. He's totally in Devontae's perfect. That was the one other take that I walked away from that game with. So
wow.
Even though he didn't do anything
teaching
bad, other
good
than
and bad,
bad but... teaching lessons about good and bad.
Yeah, you guys.
Hey,
really,
Star Wars. So, all right, you ready for my question before I take up too much of your podcast?
No, you're good. You're good. Let's hear it.
All right, it has to do with getting Jaggy. Oh. So I know about your longstanding relationship with the Jaguars, and they're coming into or we're going. You're going there.
Yes.
I want to know because the Bengals. This is the game. We're back to 500. When we get back to 500, that's where it's like it's the new beginning. Who won the Bengals? Is going to step up and make the Jags get Jaggy.
Okay, the more we can talk about getting Jaggy, the better. Although it takes me to some dark places, I do enjoy the concept of hashtag That's So Jaggy. Almost as much as I love the concept of hashtag Optimistic Bobby, which has really continued to take off. What's our Twitter count? Do we know our Twitter follower?
Oh God, the roller coaster got me for a week, and I fell off a little bit. I'm in the mid 500s.
Okay,
it's a lot, Paul. You and Jim, my respect for you with all those thousands of followers. Like it's like you just, it's a lot, man. I don't know how you sleep at night knowing that there's so many people that have so many emotional takes out there for you. But yeah,
get out there and follow at Bobby Slattery. Get out there and get your follow for Optimistic Bobby. He needs you, and just try to remember, keep it optimistic. If you're gonna dive in, keep it optimistic. I got to tell you, quick story. We get lots of email and stuff like that, and there was one. Sometimes people aren't so happy. The subject header said 3 complaints and a compliment, and the first 3 were things they didn't like about the podcast and some of our coverage, and they thought that we were too negative. The one compliment, you know what the one compliment in his email was? He loves Optimistic Bobby and thinks he's a great addition to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate
Boom.
It. You tell that
Boom.
Special fan out there, thank you. I appreciate that. I think about my Bengals with positivity, and I like to think that that's going to reflect in the playoffs at the end of the year. So I hope that happens.
Just you're affecting lives right now. Just know that.
Thank you.
Can we real?
I'm sorry,
but
that's very negative.
Can we real quick talk about Brew and Q since it's this weekend?
Yeah, Saturday. Brew and Q. Go to the website 50westbrew.com. Us in Great Lakes, they're coming down. Tons of barbecue, tons of beer from Great Lakes, tons of beer from 50 West. We've got our collaboration beer. David Hopperfield is going to be making his appearance. So it's going to be great. So that's Saturday. The great state of Kentucky has been enjoying 50 West beer for the first time ever, and we have been very well received. So thank you for all the Kentucky listeners out there for supporting us.
What time
is Brewing? It's been really fun.
When does it get going?
4 o'clock. It starts 4 o'clock on Saturday. You can buy your tickets online. $40 includes everything you could possibly eat and 9 drink tickets. Eight, nine drink tickets. Enough to drink that you're not gonna have a problem.
There's one thing I know about Great Lakes beer and a lot of your beers is that you will be buzzed in a hurry.
You'll feel pretty good. We had to come up with some sort of number.
I can tell you that much.
Yeah, I would agree. You'll if you get to the final number, you're gonna be feeling pretty good.
So, all right, well, check that out, man. 50westbrew.com. Get your tickets for the Bruins this weekend. Awesome event. Make sure you head out there. Bobby, thank you so much again for joining us, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Awesome. We'll see, boss.
All right, Jim. So let's discuss it.
Yeah.
Who will be the one to take advantage of jagginess?
William Jackson.
You guys steal these things from me.
You asked me first.
I know. I should have just said it first. I should have blurted it out.
Yeah. And because this is the only way the Bengals win.
Bortles.
It's Bortles. That's the only way, in my opinion, is if you're right. If it's close and they make that guy throw, and let's be real, the Bengals haven't been able to make anyone do anything on defense. You know what I mean? Like even the Colts. The Colts did whatever they wanted. They threw on their own volition and lost the game.
Yeah, which is stupid.
Which the Jags have been far more disciplined. And not letting him throw. 3rd and 8, they're going to run it. And we'll punt and try it again.
Yeah.
And the reason I say William Jackson a third is because of the corners. A, he's the healthiest. Drake Kirkpatrick, gutted out. I thought had a great game against the Colts and run support and tackling for a lot. I was like, wow. But he hurt himself.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Jones is playing with a fracture in his back. So, and look, he has. When was the last time Adam had an interception? I don't know. That's not really Sean Williams' game. George, not really his game either. So I think it's got to be William Jackson the third. Sticky fingers, just catching a Bortles jaggy throw,
making a play. Yeah, or Vontaze Burfict.
Yeah.
I mean, they need him to show some instincts in the short, because you're going to see more. They like the short passing game as well to keep it safe. So maybe it's perfect doing something like he did against Washington in the preseason.
He needs to, because that dude hasn't really been around I've noticed.
They need they're going to need a play when Blake is passing, and I agree. That's what jagginess is, really. That's what jagginess was born. Jagginess was born in Blake Bortles' right arm and Gus Bradley's brain. That's why everything that's so jaggy. So, I agree with you. I think it's probably William Jackson the third, but it's got to be some sort of pick turnover. Bengals turnover differential is abysmal, and the Jags are +9. You know, the Jags were -26 the last two seasons combined, and they're +9 this year. It ain't that hard, folks. Don't let Blake Bortles throw picks.
Right.
And guess what? Things will turn out a little bit better for you.
Yeah.
God, so bitter.
I was going to say, you also need the PDJ to jump off the bandwagon for the first time. Get rolling.
That's it. Ugh. All right, let's get out of here. Our predictions are in the book. Thanks to everybody that responded with all their giant Halloween candy.
Yeah, see?
I know. I don't know where this is happening. You go to Adam's house. You see Adam Jones?
Yes.
He has nothing but giant jumbos. You need to go find where Adam Jones lives and go there, because life is good. There's a lot. I mean, but I don't know. There's just not enough I didn't realize there was enough neighborhoods that you could really do that. But thanks to everybody that sent their photos in of all their Halloween candy from the Ivory Tower, which I love. Hashtag Ivory Tower. That's good. Anyway, we're off to Jacksonville. So, I know. No one's happy
about
that.
But it will be 80. So I guess
it will be 80. At least it'll be warm. So we're off to Jacksonville. All your coverage from there. So keep checking Cincinnati.com. Pick up our Bengals app. Chris Smith, former Jag. And now current Bengal will be our guest Tuesday on Beyond the Stripes, 7 o'clock. Holy Grail Banks, come on down. Check that out. Anyway, we will talk to you next week on the BBP, reacting to whatever happens in Jacksonville. So we'll talk to you later.
All right. We are back. Ahead to the past, as it were. Nick Vahil. The truth is out. That is the proper way to pronounce your name.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Now, you've been known as Nick Vigil your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you correct anybody?
That's just what it is, I guess. You know, even my family, we call it, it's been Vigil.
Okay.
We're Vigils, you know, I don't know why.
What is Vigil? Where does that come from?
It's Spanish.
It's Spanish?
Mm-hmm.
So you're Spanish?
Yes.
Si. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It come to my attention that you at first intended to be a professional bull rider. Is that right?
Well, when I was really little.
When you were really little.
Yeah, we were pretty young.
And then your brother fell off a bull while riding.
Yep.
You thought he broke his neck.
Yep.
And mom and dad after that said to brother and brother Vahil, what?
They said, that's enough of that.
You're done.
They were done.
Yeah, how old were you then?
I was probably 9 or 10, and he was 12.
Okay.
Maybe 12, 11 or 12.
And what sort of injury did he have?
Nothing. He just he got bucked off. He fell right on the top of his neck.
Okay.
You know, they had to put him in the neck brace, and they said, you know, he could have very easily broke his neck, you know, on the way to the hospital or whatever, if they moved it wrong, anything like that. So he got lucky.
What does a professional bull rider earn per year?
I have no idea.
Maybe less than you're earning right now.
Maybe.
So it's a pretty good career move for your brother to fall on his head.
Yeah, I think it worked out good
for us. Do you thank him every day? Thank you for falling on your head. So I'm a professional football player instead of a bull rider.
I haven't thanked him for that. I don't think ever, because he crushed our first dream.
Gotcha.
So.
He crushed your, this dream is better than that one.
This is a good one.
Do guys who ride bulls get hurt worse than guys who play football?
I would say it depends on the guy, but I would say yeah.
I would think so.
I would think so.
That's scary. Well, what is fun about getting your guts tossed around on top of an angry cow?
Well, it's not fun when you fall off, but it's fun when you're riding them.
But it's for like 3 seconds, right?
Eight. You got to hold on for eight.
Eight. You got to hold on for eight.
Mm-hmm.
Why are these bulls so angry? Why don't they just let you like ride them like horses?
They breed them for that. They breed them to buck.
They breed them to buck.
They And they teach them.
They hit them with a hot poker every time a person gets on top. What do they do? Seriously.
They strap these. Well, they put these, what they call, on the backs of the flanks, and it tickles them a little bit to buck. And then when they're young, you know, they breed them to other bucking bulls that are good. And then when they're young, they strap these things on them to where they buck. And then when they buck for 8 seconds, they release it. So the bull learns to buck and buck and buck until it feels the release of the whatever they strap around them.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Do you, when riding bulls, do you study film? Do you know that this bull bucks this way or that bull bucks? Do you do like the NFL guys do? Do you know your opponent?
When I was that little, I did not.
Did not have it to a science.
I did not have to do that, no.
But pro guys, do they do that?
I'm sure that they do.
They go in a film room and they check out the bull that they're about to ride.
I bet they do, yeah.
Tendencies. They look for tendencies?
Yeah, I think they do, yeah.
This guy's going to do this in this situation.
Uh-huh.
I would think that would be helpful.
Yeah, I think so.
What is mutton busting?
I just ride sheep.
You ride a sheep?
Uh-huh.
Is that for the little guys like you guys?
Yeah, real little. When we were really little.
Right. Would you rather sack Ben Roethlisberger or bust a mutton?
Sack Ben Roethlisberger.
A little more money, a little less danger.
That's right.
Do the two activities have anything in common?
Got to have good grip strength. I would say that.
All right. Did you learn anything?
Good coordination. You got to have good coordination.
I mean, you get hurt riding a bull. You get hurt playing football. Did the experience of riding a bull teach you anything about perseverance, overcoming pain, whatever? Did you learn anything from riding bulls when you were a little kid?
Yeah, being tough.
Being tough.
Mm-hmm. You know, you get knocked down, get back up every time. So.
Well, that's kind of a life lesson,
that's
right?
That's kind of a life lesson, yeah.
What do you think of my hair?
I think it looks a little silly.
A little silly?
A little silly.
It's Jim's hair. Would you ever run with the bulls at Pamplona?
I would like to.
You would?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I watched a documentary on it, though, and they said that they're not allowing people as much to do that anymore.
Why? Because they get
hurt? Well, they get hurt, and then the art of the bull, the running with the bulls is the people who actually want to run next to the bulls, they can't do it anymore because it's so packed. So the people that actually know how to do it and they want to do it, they want to, you know, get next to them. And
you just get a bunch of drunk people out there who think it'd be a great time.
Yeah, exactly.
A great thing, great moment on Instagram.
Yeah.
What do you think of mechanical bulls?
I think they're cool.
Have you ever ridden one like a Gillies, Texas?
I rode one in Boise, Idaho when I was in college.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like Boise, Idaho. Went to a basketball game there once. Very pretty. Got like a trout stream running through the middle of town.
Yeah.
How about that? You probably didn't know that a city boy like me would ever know that there was a trout stream running through the middle of Boise, Idaho. Do you hunt?
I do.
What was your biggest, I don't know what you call it, I'm not a hunter, biggest kill, biggest trophy, biggest moment?
I wouldn't say I've had one yet. I haven't killed nothing big yet.
Well, that,
I haven't been able to hunt really a big bull or deer since high school. Playing football.
Too much football, not enough.
Too much football, not enough hunting.
How many cowboy hats do you own?
I own one.
Just one?
I have been talking about it for about 2 years that I got to buy one.
You got to get another one.
And I have inherited my dad's old one that's got holes in it. And
really?
Beat up. Yeah.
So a family heirloom, though. You got to keep that.
Uh-huh.
How many pairs of boots do you own?
I got one pair of cowboy boots. I got one pair of hunting boots.
Really?
Okay. That's it, yeah.
Are you a little bit tired of me asking you kind of cliched hunting, fishing, I'm an outdoorsman questions?
No, I like it.
Okay, well, I could switch. In fact, I will.
Okay.
What's your favorite Halloween costume ever that you ever wore as a child?
I was Rocky Balboa 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
Kid, yeah.
That's cool.
Uh-huh, when I was a little kid.
Now,
Rocky.
Did you have to buy anything for that?
No, I think we just used some sweatpants.
Yeah.
Maybe some tape up the hands.
Yeah.
And put a little blood on it.
Were you able to make your eyes droop, and did you have that, like, Philadelphia coat?
Yeah, my mom did all the makeup and everything, so.
Yeah, so you really look like him?
I don't know, as close as I could.
What's your best candy?
My favorite candy?
Yeah.
Any kind of gummy. Like gummy worms, gummy bears.
What did you think of people who gave you, like, healthy, like, apples?
Don't go there next year.
What, yeah, right. Well, you grew up in a small town. The choice of houses might have been a little limited.
That's right.
Well, just skip them. That house gave us apples last year. We ain't going there.
That's right.
I once got pencils. Did you ever get a pencil for Halloween?
I can't say I did.
Yeah, what's the point, man? favorite scary movie?
I haven't seen a scary movie in a while. I can't.
Can I make a recommendation?
Yeah.
Did you ever see The Exorcist?
Yes, I did. The old one.
Yeah, the original.
Yeah, the original.
Definitely the original.
I've seen the original. All
right. You ever see The Strangers?
Yes, saw that. That was a pretty one.
Oh, man.
I saw that one. The Conjuring. The Conjuring was good.
The what?
The Conjuring.
I didn't see that.
You ever watch that one? That was a scary one.
But I recommend The Strangers to people. They're like, what's The Strangers? Never heard of it.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
Go see The Strangers. Why do you think Vontaze has taken such a liking to you? I mean, he calls you Luke, as in Keekly.
Yeah. Shoot, I don't know. I can't tell you why.
What kind of guy do you think he is?
I think he's a great guy. You know, he loves football. He does anything for you if you ask him. I think he's a lot different than what a lot of people think.
What has he done for you?
I mean, he's helped me with everything as far as football, you know, understanding the defense, understand anything I've ever asked him, he's helped me out with.
Anything personal, like help you with a move or help you with a problem, you know what I mean, other than football?
I mean, I've never really asked him for anything like that, okay. But I'm sure if I asked him, he'd do it.
Okay.
No question in my mind.
Do you mind if I smoke this cigar?
No, go ahead.
Okay, good. Do you think Vontaze would make a good bull rider?
A good book rider?
Bull rider.
A bull rider?
Oh, a book rider, too.
I thought you said book rider. Halloween. I don't know about book rider, but he might make a good bull rider. He's maybe a little big.
Yeah, okay. Well, what is your best attribute as a linebacker? I'll ask you one serious question. That's my limit.
I would say my quickness.
Yeah.
I think I got a pretty good burst, you know, between.
And you're versatile.
Yeah.
I mean, you can stop a running back in the hole as easily as you can go cover him out in the flat.
Yeah, I think so.
That's a pretty valuable asset.
Mm-hmm.
You play a lot of plays, maybe more than anybody else.
Yeah.
Do you get tired?
Yeah, there's times where I get tired.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you just worry about, then you get to go back to the bench and relax for a little while.
You were also an all-state running back in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever want to be like the new Domantas Peko on fourth down and goal or on two-point conversions, be the fullback and get the ball?
Not me. Them guys get hit too hard.
Huh? Oh, you've never petitioned the offensive guys? You've never said to Paul Alexander,
you know, not once.
Give me the ball.
Not once.
Not once.
Not once.
I mean, you scored 19 touchdowns, right, as a senior in high school?
I can't remember. Something like that.
Oh, yeah. It was big.
Okay.
You'd probably be pretty good at that.
Yeah.
What is it like? You went to Utah State, grew up in Plain City.
Yeah.
It's like I grew up in Average Town. You grew up in Plain City, population of 5,000. What is it like living in Utah where the Mormon influence is so strong? Is it any different there living there than anywhere else?
I'd say it's a little bit different.
How so?
I mean, I don't know. I've only lived here and I've only lived there, so.
Okay. But, it has sort of a mystique about it. If you're not from there, I've covered a lot of stuff in Salt Lake City and other places. I actually covered a basketball game in Ogden, Utah, which is pretty close to you, right? Huh?
Where at? Weber State?
Yeah, Weber. It was a first-round tournament game many years ago.
Very nice.
It snowed like crazy, and Cincinnati lost, and I was there for like 12 hours. A lot of fun. What is your perfect non-football day?
My perfect non-football day?
Yeah.
Probably wake up, go hunting in the morning, and then go fly fishing at night.
At night?
Yeah. Well, before it gets dark.
Or like it's sunset.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. You ever see a river runs through it?
I have.
You have not?
I have.
Oh, yeah. Great movie.
Brad Pitt, right?
Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt, yeah.
It was a better book.
I like that one.
Yeah. You should read the book.
Never read the book.
Do you like cities? I mean, is that a silly question? A guy who's small town, kind of out in the middle of Utah, nowhere. Do you enjoy being around lots of people?
No, I'm kind of more of a...
Yeah.
I kind of like my space. I don't come into the city a lot. You know, I live 20 minutes north.
That's what I thought.
But I like the food. There's a lot more food options.
A lot more food options, a lot more to do, at least nightlife-wise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
My son lives in Brooklyn. You think you could ever live there?
I don't think so.
Could live in Brooklyn?
I don't think I could live there. That's a little much for me.
Me neither, brother.
Yeah.
What do you like about living around here?
I would say first off is the food. Like I said,
the food.
Like where I come, like in Utah, where I grew up, there's not a lot of places to go out and get go to a good restaurant. So,
what kind of food do you like here?
I like all the steakhouses.
Yeah,
probably the
good
first thing. Yeah,
good. Are you first name basis with Jeff Ruby?
I don't believe that I am.
You should be.
I should be.
If you like steakhouses,
I know.
Do you like Rocky Mountain oysters?
No.
Does anybody know what that is?
No, I don't.
I'm not going to say.
Yeah.
But that's kind of a delicacy out there, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, see, I'm perpetrating yet another stereotype. I'm done with you, Nick. Do you have anything that you would like to ask me?
No, I don't think so. I think we're good here.
It's your one shot.
It's my one shot.
Andy Dalton was here last week. He couldn't wait to ask me something that would embarrass me.
What did he ask you?
He asked me what the worst thing I did when I was a kid.
Oh, shoot.
I told him I put Red Hots in the fish tank at the pet store.
Oh, that's a good one.
You know Red Hots, those little cinnamon candy?
Yeah.
I ruined a lot of $30 fish, man.
Oh, I bet.
That's the worst thing I ever did.
Dang.
All right, you are off the hot seat, Nick Vigil. Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it.
We will be back in 1 minute from Beyond the Stripes.